We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers.
I'm Ronnie Allen. I am delighted to present today's guest of honor. Here's a quote from her. I find it hard to resist the urge to sing along with the washing machine, the hairdryer, a weed eater, a bird, or the sound of wind in the trees. Unquote. Well, back in the 80s, she was so hot on the country chart that had she made a record singing along with a washing machine, I am sure it would have been a huge hit. Between 1980 and 1985, she had 11 top 10 records, two of which made number one, and one of those crossed over big to the pop chart. And in 1982, she was voted the Academy of Country Music's top female vocalist. There's so much more to tell, and right now it's time for me to let her tell her story. So without further ado, but with a little drum roll, welcome, Sylvia!
Yay! Thank you. What a great introduction. Thank you so much, Ronnie.
Sylvia, you were born with more than one name. Now, actually, there's some incorrect information out there. We're going to clarify something. If you visit Wikipedia, it mentions a name that you said privately to me is not correct. You were actually born with the name Sylvia Jane Kirby.
That is correct. That's my real name.
Where did this Allen come about? I mean, my name is Ronnie Allen.
Right.
Where did they come about with that information?
Well, my first marriage, my last name was Allen.
Oh, I see.
And that's my married name at the time. At that time, Deborah Allen was also on the record label, created a problem for me going by the name Sylvia Allen. I was happy to go by Sylvia Kirby, but the record label thought that sounded a little mundane and too much like a vacuum cleaner. So I just very quickly, just really with no forethought, just said, well, why don't we just use my first name? There aren't any other Sylvias in country music.
Well, in country music, that's true.
Yes, but in other music there is. But, I mean, that's how much conversation ensued. Everybody just looked at each other and went, okay, let's do that. And that was it. I mean, it was no big plan. It just happened that way.
Of course, on the pop chart and the rhythm and blues chart, there was Sylvia of Mickey and Sylvia, Sylvia Robinson. Pillow Talk was her big hit. I just heard your dog. Now, whenever I do an interview, it always happens. A dog pops into the interview. So what's your dog's name?
Kate, with a C, like Kate Blanchett.
Okay. Hello, dog. Love it.
Yes, Kate has a voice, and she likes to vocalize.
Sylvia Robinson, of course, had Love is Strange as part of Mickey and Sylvia, the duo. We're going to get right to your story, and there's just so much to tell and so much to play, so we're going to kind of move along. Give the dog a couple of biscuits.
I'm going to try.
Okay.
He wants to be interviewed, too.
Oh, that's fine. Your singing career kind of started at the age of three. Not really, but you were asked to sing at a small church. So I guess that's when you first started singing.
Well, in the public eye, my mother tells the story that I was actually humming in my crib. She would come in the morning, and I would just be lying there awake, just making humming sounds. I innately have always sang. It wasn't anything somebody encouraged me to do. Well, of course, when I began singing, my mother taught me Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star and those kinds of songs, but I would just be singing all day long, like, you know, you breathe and you sleep and you eat and you sing.
Were you into country music?
Oh, yes, I was. My dad is from Tennessee originally, and we were making trips down to visit my grandparents, every month at least, if not more than once a month. And we would often be driving down on a Friday night after my dad and mom got off work, so we would listen to the Grand Ole Opry going down to visit my grandparents. So I grew up listening to Talkback Trembling Lips and I've Got a Tiger by the Tail, and as I got older, Tammy Wynette, and, you know, I listened to a lot of country music. That was real big. Growing up in the Midwest, I listened to other kinds of music as well, but it was very much the kind of the core of what I listened to.
Back then, were you dreaming of being a country star on your own?
Not when I was tiny. I always knew that that's what I wanted to do with my life, but I didn't know how to even imagine it except to imagine standing and singing in front of a lot of people.
Right.
I didn't know what that entailed. But when I got, you know, junior high school age, and I was still saying, you know, when I grow up I'm going to be a singer, you begin to think, okay, now how do you do that? Of course, you don't really know what that life entails till you get out there and you live it. I began making a mental plan, if you will. In high school, I took all the business kind of courses that I could take because my plan was to move to Nashville after graduation from high school and hopefully get a job working in the music industry in some way so that I would have time to learn how the music industry works. And that being a way to make me wise and make good decisions because, you know, when you don't live in the music culture of Nashville, I think you often hear stories about, oh, you know, somebody went to Nashville and they mortgaged their farm and they lost it all because some shyster, you know, wanted to record them that absconded with the funds. And so I had heard those stories. So I thought, you know, if I go to Nashville and I work in the music industry itself for a few years, like an internship, though I didn't know that word at the time, I figured that would be a good way to educate myself about how it all works. And I figured, you know, this isn't something I'm going to give it a shot and see if it happens. If not, I'm going to fall back on something else. I always was absolutely determined that I would record in country music. I mean, it did not enter my mind that it would not happen.
This was your mission. Were you born in Kokomo, Indiana?
Yes, I was.
Were you living there? Is that where you went to high school, Kokomo?
Yes, I went to Northwestern High School.
Okay. The sojourn to Nashville went from Kokomo to Nashville, and I guess it was, what, around the late part of, let's see, it says December here, 1976. Does that sound right, when you went to Nashville with demo tape?
It was actually, well, you're close. It was December 26th of 1975.
Wikipedia got it wrong. They say 76.
Yeah. It's funny how these things, it's probably a typo.
You did tell me that this article on Wikipedia is reasonably accurate, so people that read
it. Well, reasonably.
Reasonably, okay.
I mean, I could pick it apart and say, well, it didn't really happen quite that way. But,
okay. Close enough. Well, they say close enough for rock and roll. We could say close enough for country music. I'm Ronnie Allen talking to Sylvia, and right now we're in Nashville. Well, you're not in Nashville, but back in December 26th, 1975, you moved there. You ultimately landed a job as a secretary for a famous producer and publisher by the name of Tom Collins. I want to point out that he is not to be confused with a gentleman named Tommy Collins, who is a recording artist that Merle Haggard sang about on that record Leonard, and Tommy Collins was a songwriter, but this is a different one, a Tom Collins.
Collins, he produced Barbara Mandrell and Ronnie Millsap, Dee Warner.
Right, and he also produced a pretty good drink, too, called the Tom Collins.
Well, he wishes. He always would joke about that.
How did you land the job as a secretary for him? Did you just knock on doors?
Yes, I did just knock on doors. I literally parked my little pea green Maverick down on Music Row and just started knocking on doors. I think what really happened is good timing. It was just, you know, things aligned themselves, and Janie Fricke, who was the receptionist secretary at the Tom Collins Publishing Company at the time, had just signed with Columbia Records. She had had those duets, kind
Johnny,
of.
She'd Johnny Duncan.
A line or two, Johnny Duncan,
yes,
yeah. And so she was starting to get some notoriety and had just been signed with the label. And so she was going to be leaving, and they were actually looking for a receptionist secretary, and I happened to walk in the door just at the right moment, and
I got
the job.
Were you friendly with Janie? Did you know her pretty well then?
Oh, yes. Yes,
did you stay in touch?
I got to know Janie.
Did you stay in touch with her?
Not recently, but I think in 2006 or 7, we did a show together. It was kind of a gathering of people from the 80s that did a show out in Utah, and I got to visit with her one afternoon there, and it was really nice to catch up. Oh. But I've always really admired Janie. She's just got a beautiful voice and a beautiful personality.
Oh, absolutely.
And she's still singing and still singing beautifully.
You auditioned at some point for Dave and Sugar.
Yes, and that's really when things began to change, because I had been working at the publishing company, typing song lyrics into the database, going to get people lunch, vacuuming the floors and making the coffee, and tabulating royalty returns. I mean, I did a little bit of everything.
Of course, you were singing along to the vacuum cleaner.
Oh, absolutely. I'm singing every moment. In fact, what was so great, it was like an immersion in songwriting, because a lot of great songwriters wrote on staff at PyGM Music where I was working.
I see.
With Tom Collins. Dean Dillon, or in the early days, he was going by his real name, Dean Rutherford. He would come in and play some of these songs that eventually began being recorded by people like George Strait. Kent Robbins was a hit songwriter on staff, and John Schwears, and there's a huge list. Kai Fleming and Dennis Morgan, who wrote a lot of the songs that I recorded that became hits. I was just around like the A-team of songwriters during that time period.
You were in the right place at the right time, but you never became a member of Dave and Sugar, as I know.
No. To get back to that, I did audition. It was when Jerry Bradley, who was the head of RCA at the time,
right.
he attended those auditions, and he actually wanted me for Dave and Sugar in the group, but Dave Rowland wanted to have somebody who was blonde. So I wasn't blonde.
You weren't blonde, and you were not willing to do hair color changes and that sort of stuff.
Well, I mean, they didn't ask me that. The other Rodley was a natural blonde, and Sue Powell.
Did the audition, though, help get you enough attention to be signed as a solo artist by RCA?
Yes, it did. Not right away, though, but Jerry Bradley actually called Pi Gym Music, where I answered the phone. I was the receptionist. And that's when I learned that I did not get the gig with Dave and Sugar, but Jerry said, you know, I'm very interested in hearing some recordings, and I'm going to talk with Tom Collins about taking you in the studio and recording 3 or 4 songs and see what you guys can come up with, and I'd like to hear it. So that's how it really began. And
great.
Over the next year and a half, I was impatient, very impatiently waiting for Tom. I was listening to the songs the songwriters were bringing in. I would say, hold that song for me. I want that song. And ultimately, about a year or a year and a half later, Tom did take me in the studio and record some songs with me and played them for Jerry Bradley, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
They signed me.
Your first RCA single was a chart record. Actually, it got to number 36 on the Billboard chart, called You Don't Miss a Thing. We'll just hear a little bit of that right now.
You know what it takes to keep me calm. When it comes to loving me, baby, no, you don't miss a thing. Oh, no, you got everything I need.
That's the one that started it all. Your follow-up record to You Don't Miss a Thing was called It Don't Hurt to Dream. It was part of your first album, Drifter.
It was. It also got into the top 40, It Don't Hurt to Dream, which it always bothered me that the grammar was not correct on that.
Oh, gee whiz.
It always did, but I loved the song, and it worked, and it sang well, but I was trying to figure out, how do we say It Doesn't Hurt to Dream? That doesn't work.
Well, we're going to just hear a little bit of you singing It Don't Hurt to Dream.
It will be
you were on your way.
That's the kind of the surface story, the underlying story, and I'll just be real frank. When the third single came out, which was Tumbleweed, it was my first top 10 record, but it was going to be my last shot. The first two went top 40, you know, they went into the high 30s, and the word was, we're going to put out one more single, we'll see what happens, and I knew that it was really my last shot. So we put out Tumbleweed, and thankfully it went into the top 10. Then they said, well, let's try one more single. And my next single was Drifter, and it went to number one. Then they said, well, okay, I guess it's safe enough to do an album. I mean, they were being very cautious.
Yeah.
It was like 3 strikes, you're out.
Did you know at the time that Tumbleweed was going to be your last shot?
Yes, I pretty much knew it. Well, and that was the atmosphere at the time. I mean, female artists were really having a hard time at that point. The charts were really dominated by male artists.
True.
So the record labels, I think it was more than just RCA, it was other labels too. They weren't real eager to give females a lot of latitude, saying, oh, let's keep at it until you have a hit. At least in my observation, they would keep putting out records on a male artist, but a female artist, it was rough,
Two very talented songwriters, Kai Fleming and Dennis Morgan. Tumbleweed was written actually for you?
Yes, actually, Kai and Dennis had been to see Urban Cowboy and were inspired to write Tumbleweed just kind of after seeing that movie. They were kind of struck by that Western theme, and they knew my voice because I'd been working with them at the publishing company for years, and they played it for me, and I said, oh, that's it. I want that song. And so Tom said, okay, we'll record that song, and then luckily it became a hit. And at that point, I think some disc jockeys that played the music, especially out west,
yes,
called it prairie music.
At number 10, what a nice song, and it shows some of your vocal range that was not previously shown, I believe. That's a nice little song. Love that song.
Thank you. Actually, people ask me what is my favorite song that I recorded, and I think that's right up there. It's fun to sing. I love the sentiment of the story, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful song that for me has really held up over time.
What's a better way to follow a top 10 hit? How about a number one hit? That number one hit was Drifter. A couple of different writers on Drifter, Don Frimmer and Archie Jordan.
When Drifter was written, it was written as a ballad. It
really? You mean very, very, very slow?
Very slow. And that's how I learned it, as a ballad. The time disco was in.
Oh, yeah.
On the pop charts, you know, Donna Summer and all that, you know, the disco thing was really happening. And then Tom Collins said, hey, you know, and he said, I hear this melody, you know, with a dun, 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 you know, just like a incessant bass drum kick thing going on. And I was not into it at the beginning. I thought, I don't like this. Because it's hard when you hear something one way to then suddenly try to hear it another way, as up-tempo, you know. But it worked. You know,
absolutely.
Once we got in the studio and got the track going, I changed my mind.
Yeah.
Laughter, number one country hit by my special guest today, Sylvia, and the dog. Sylvia and Kate. This is the Sylvia and Kate show. I am yes. Ronnie Allen. And are we having fun yet?
Yes.
We're going to one of my most fun records. In fact, when I was working at WTTM in Trenton, this was always one of the most requested recordings by you, called The Matador.
The Matador, people were just crazy about that song. When I would do it in concert, people would clamor till I would do it two or three times sometimes. I would have to sing it more than once because people would just go crazy over it. It had a great beat. It was a dance kind of thing, and I cannot remember the name of it. There was a famous pitcher at the time who was really hot in the baseball world,
right.
And every time he would go on to the mound, they would play The Matador.
Your record.
Yes. It was really a fun record to have out during that time period, just like all the confluence of things that were going on in the culture at the time. And I was very resistant, and probably today I wouldn't even record the song because I'm so much an animal rights activist.
Yeah.
Bullfighting is just not...
Yeah. You've never been to a bullfight, have you?
No.
All right.
It was all just fantasy, but at the time I didn't like it, and, you know, that it was about bullfighting. I felt a lot of pressure to go ahead and record it, and it's okay that it happened that way.
This was a Bob Morris and Don Frimmer song, Don Frimmer, who also mm-hmm. co-wrote Drifter. We're going to take a listen to now The Matador by Sylvia.
I'll dream, I give my love once more to the man.
The Matador by Sylvia, and that got to number 7 on the chart. And also, there's something of note here. According to what I am reading here, you were credited with making the first concept music video clip to air on Country Music Television, CMT, with The Matador. Is that correct?
That's what they say.
Okay.
As far as I know, that is true. It was a new thing in country music. I think there had been concept videos in other genres.
Following The Matador, you had a couple more hit records before your biggest one of all, those two being Heart on the Mend, which was another top 10 record, and then Sweet Yesterday, which almost made the top 10. But then came the piece of resistance, or piece de resistance, however you say it, a song called Nobody. I love songs that are plays on words, so how could I not like this one? Did you think that this was going to be something extra special?
I knew I loved the song, but no one predicted that it would do what it did. In fact, I had recorded what was to be my second record, Just Sylvia, that album.
The album.
We had recorded all the songs for the record. Often what artists will do is they'll record more songs than they actually need for a 10
And then they
album.
May pick out what the singles are going to be later on after they hear what all of them turn out.
Right, right. And you may record 14 songs or something, and you narrow it down to the 10 best that turned out the best. And so we were at that stage where we'd already recorded the songs that we thought would be on the record, and we were going to do one more session. That morning, Kai Fleming and Dennis Morgan came in very excited and said, "We wrote a new song last night. You got to hear this. We really love it." And by the time the chorus came around the second time, I was already singing along. I mean, it was like, oh, my gosh, I love this song. So just literally at the last minute, I had just learned the song probably an hour and a half before I recorded it.
You were a quick study.
And what is also bizarre is that Tom Collins used the vocal that I did as the tracks were going down. That's the live vocal.
So there was no test vocal or anything like that?
No, there was no overdub on that.
No overdub
on that. So it was just, so that's the vocal that I sang as the music tracks were being played live in the studio. It was really magical. People in the studio just loved the song. It was like, there was this electricity in the air. Of course, we didn't know that it was going to be, you know, a multi-million selling record or any of that. I mean, nobody knew that, but everyone knew that they loved it. And it just all came together just magically. It was beautiful.
You say you're nobody.
Nobody. What a great song that is. You're Nobody called today. Just absolutely love it. And it has the expression, you have one shot left. Earlier in the interview, you were talking about your music career after the first two records. You said, well, you figured you had one shot left. Maybe, maybe subconsciously you were thinking of that line in Nobody.
You never know.
I think that is one of the most popular lines in that song, got one shot left. I love that line. And, in fact, it not only hit number one on the country chart, spent a total of 24 weeks on the country chart, and as icing on the proverbial cake, got to number 15 on the pop chart. So, with Nobody, you are officially a bona fide top 40 pop music singer. And you followed that one up with a number two record called Like Nothing Ever Happened, and then you had one that was not really an official release as such, a record you did with James Galway of the Wayward Wind.
James Galway was in Nashville doing kind of a country record, which was kind of a novel thing for a classical artist to come to Nashville, and I think it, you know, did something to boost his career, got a lot of press out of it. And I actually sang two songs on his album. I don't think the album is in print anymore. Wonderful thing, I got to work with him, that was a blessing, and then to get to be on the BBC with him, I did a television show, so it took me to England, which I had never been there before, and that was pretty fun. It was great to get the opportunity to do that, and I always loved that song, The Wayward Wind.
We're going to play a couple more of your hits. One of the most popular ones when I worked at WTTM was one called Snapshot. I believe there was a Snapshot album, too, wasn't there?
Yeah, I guess
there was. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's been a few years. You have to judge
these days,
there,
they would have to rewrite that song and call it Video Surveillance or something. 30 years later, wouldn't just be a mere snapshot?
I think in some ways, for me, it's a clone of Nobody, but it really did well for me, and I'm really glad to have the opportunity to sing it.
You mean Nobody was the positive and Snapshot was the negative or something like that, like a clone back and forth? Maybe.
Another pun. I love it. I love those puns.
Business.
on his chain. Must be to the office. Poor baby's leaving early, staying late. He's got an alibi for every move he makes, except for the snapshot.
Finally, before we get to one of your later projects that you're so proud of, we're going to talk about Fallen in Love. Also, I never quite got back from Loving You as a top three record. Fallen in Love, by the way, got to number two and spent 22 weeks on the country chart, which is longer than any other record other than Nobody, which spent 24. So can we listen to just a little bit of that one called Fallen in Love? How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's reaching, somebody's touching. People somewhere falling in love. One simple glance can start a romance. Next thing you know, they're falling in love. Oh, yeah. Somebody whispers, somebody shivers. He's saying something she wants to hear. She moves closer, he wants to hold her.
Pretty much covers your RCA career, other than the fact that I didn't ask you this question. How much touring did you do? I read somewhere that you were doing 200 shows a year. Is that an exaggeration?
No, it's not. Actually, it was probably a little bit more than 200. I lived on the road. Yeah, the first full year that I was on the road was 1981, and I worked 323 dates that year.
Gosh.
In 323 different towns. And I made a lot of those by car or airplane. I did not have a bus at that time. I didn't get a bus until I started touring with my own bus in January of 83, I believe.
Wow.
So those first few years were pretty rough, but it was much better once I got my own bus.
There's so much more about Sylvia, folks, that you can read about on the internet, most of which is true. There might be a few fibs here and there, but you just got an incredible story. We could actually do a mini series on you, but we don't have the time to do that. So we're going to kind of cut to the chase. In the early 2000s, you formed your own label called Red Pony.
Yes, I did. And the story about Red Pony is that back in the late 80s, I went back to a childhood home that I lived in way back in the hollers. They call them hollers. In Macon County, Tennessee, and I actually found a toy that I had played with as a child. It was partially buried in the ground, and I took a stick and dug it up, and it was this little plastic red pony that I had gotten. And I cleaned it up and brought it home, and when I began thinking about what am I going to call my record label, this was after the RCA deal had ended, and I had begun songwriting and trying to figure out how to make music in the world apart from a major label. I decided to name my record label Red Pony because of the symbolism of something from my childhood that felt like it was innocence and my innate creativity
right.
and playfulness. I literally unearthed it, and it was like a rebirth.
You had a couple of albums on Red Pony, and the first one was The Real Story.
And then the next one was Where in the World.
That's the one I have. I have Where in the World. We're going to play a few tracks from Where in the World, but before I do, I want to know a little bit about finding your voice, what you are doing right now. Your new name is Sylvia Hutton.
That's my married name, Sylvia
okay.
Hutton. And I work as a personal development coach or life coach, people call it.
Certified life and career coach. You're a graduate of the Hudson Institute in Santa Barbara, California. Was that a music degree of some sort?
No, that's a coaching degree. I literally have a certification as a life coach and career coach. And recently have changed what I call myself. I often call myself an artist mentor because some of the people that I work with in my work now are other artists or songwriters or creative people in the creative arts in some way. Really what I do is help people develop personally, a personal development coach. I'm helping people grow into who they really are, into finding what is it they care about, what is it they want to create, what is it they, how do they want to live their lives more fully.
You mentor recording artists, songwriters, musicians, and music industry professionals to deepen into their authentic voice.
I use the word voice meaning actual voice, but mainly meaning your voice of expression. I've worked with jewelers. I've worked with painters. I've worked with actors,
wow.
directors. So anybody who is trying to find their creative voice, and that can be in many different modalities.
What is the website so that people can learn a bit more?
Yeah, they can go to sylviahutton.net, sylviahutton.net, and you can read about me. And if you are interested, you can contact me there.
I'm going to play portions of four different tracks from your CD called Where in the World. I do want to also point out that you came out with a Christmas CD called A Cradle in Bethlehem. What I'm going to do is run one of the tracks from that as a bonus track after the interview. Well, we're going to conclude the interview right now with portions of four different songs. The first two I picked out, and I asked you to pick out one or two others, and you have. So let's take the Ronnie Allen choices first. Here's a song that was a big hit by the Hollies. And a lot of people might think, oh, country singer Sylvia doing Bus Stop. Is that unusual? Is it a song that you just happen to like a lot?
Yeah, it's a little unusual choice maybe, but at the time I was recording the Where in the World record, I was driving from a visit home in Indiana to my mother's house, and I had the radio on, and that song came on, and I thought, oh my gosh, I always loved that song. So I talked with my friend John Mock. He said, oh, I love that song too, and he worked on an arrangement, and we worked on it together, and bingo.
Bus stop one day, he's there, I say, please share my umbrella. Bus stop, bus goes, he stays, love grows under my umbrella. All that summer we enjoyed it, wind and rain and shine. That umbrella we employed it, by August he was mine.
The Beatles. In My Life. Great Lennon-McCartney song. Amazingly, never a single, but a lot of people feel it should have been a Beatles single.
I didn't know that it had never been a single. That's interesting, because it's certainly one of the best known of their songs. The song has a depth to it, and also a lot of space in it where you can attach your own sense of what that song means to you personally. So it's one of those songs that, for me, is just magic.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better, some have gone, and some remain. All these places have their moments, with lovers and friends I still can recall. Some are dead and some are living. In my life, I've loved them all.
One of the two that you picked out was Marcy.
Marcy was written by Joni Mitchell. In my opinion, this is one of the most unbelievably well-written songs of all time. The way she uses metaphor of red and green in each of the verses. And the thing that really blew me away is when I learned that she wrote it when she was 19 years old. I just think it's one of the best songs ever.
Marcy in a coat of flowers stops inside a candy store. Reds are sweet and greens are sour. Still no letter at her door. So she'll wash her flower curtains, hang them in the wind to dry, dust her tables with his shirt and wave another day goodbye. Marcy's faucet needs a plumber. Marcy's sorrow needs a man. Red is autumn, green is summer. Greens are turning and the sand. All along the ocean beaches, stares up empty at the sky. Marcy buys a bag of peaches, stops a postman passing by. And summer goes, falls to the sidewalk like string and brown paper. Winter blows up from the river, there's no one to take her.
Are these CDs available for people that would like them right now? Are they all in print?
Yes, they are available through CDBaby.com, which is where a lot of independent artists' music is. And they also make music available on Amazon and, you know, all kinds of places.
Right.
Yes, it's definitely out there. I would suggest you go to CDBaby.com because the prices are great there. They're affordable, and what's great about CD Baby is they are totally in the artist camp. They want the artist to take as much of the proceeds or the profit from the records that
right.
are sold on their site
okay.
as they can.
You have had an incredible career. Are you still doing performances?
Yes, I do occasionally. Just a handful of concerts a year. And I'm going to be in Hershey, Pennsylvania on March 29th this
okay.
year, 2014, at the theater there. And I hope people will come out and see the shows that day. And I love to perform, but mostly these days I'm focused on my coaching career. But I still see my voice teacher every Wednesday at 11:30. And so I stay in touch with my voice and sing. I still love to sing just as much as I've always loved to sing. And so I hope people will come and have some fun at the show.
Well, Sylvia, this has been a joy for me, and I know it will be for your fans and for my listeners. I wish you health, happiness, and success. Are you planning any more Red Ponies?
I am planning, actually. I'm looking forward to sometime this year to get started on a new recording project. I feel a lot of energy to be recording in this coming year, so stay tuned.
We're going to close the show right now with the title track from Where in the World? What is it called?
Where in the World?
Thank you again, Sylvia. All the best to you.
You're welcome.
Go down to the corner for coffee, and I hear the talk about a war in a faraway country, so I take a walk. Out on the street there's a newspaper stand, crawling with stories that trouble the land. Just when the world's looking painfully blue, I see a light shining through. Looking into the hundreds of faces as they quickly pass, they're all running their separate races, and they move so fast. Do they have somewhere they quietly go, telling their secrets to someone they know? Do they have even a hope or a prayer of finding a love they can share? I wonder, where in the world did I find someone like you? Did you come in from the rain? Did you step out of the blue? Are you a wish in a well, from a coin someone threw? I wonder, where in the world did I find you? More than the right circumstances to bring you to me. Something was guiding us, body and soul. Something was moving beyond our control. In this creation of wondrous sights, what made me look in your eyes? I wonder, where in the world did I find someone like you? Did you come in from the rain? Did you step out of the blue? Are you a wish in a well, from a coin someone threw? I wonder, where in the world did I find you? I wonder, where in the world did I find you?
We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers.
Well, that's the show. I thank Sylvia so very much. Right now, here's a couple of bonus tracks from her Christmas CD on Red Pony Records, entitled A Cradle in Bethlehem. Here's the one that she personally picked out for me to play. Angels We Have Heard on High.
Singing o'er the plains and the mountains in reply, echoing their joyous strains. Gloria in excelsis Deo. What the gladsome tidings be, which inspire your heavenly song. just a newborn king.
Finally, this is Sylvia's most recent single. It came out in 2011. The song was written by Craig Bickert and Jeff Penig. Cumberland Rose.
They call her Cumberland Rose, where the Cumberland flows. And the sound of her voice lingers on. Oh, the river valley rings when her broken heart sings for the love of sweet Cumberland Rose. There's a bitter wind blowing off the lonesome plateau, and the sad song it carries is a song they all know. Now the melody mingles with the mockingbird's cry, and the woman who's singing has a tear in her eye. They call her Cumberland Rose, where the Cumberland flows, and the sound of her voice lingers on. Oh, the river valley rings when her broken heart sings for the love of sweet Cumberland Rose. It's a question she's asking of the angels above. Oh, why have they taken her innocent love? Now her melody mingles with the mourning dove's sigh, and the water that ripples in its endless goodbye. They call her Cumberland Rose, where the Cumberland flows, and the sound of her voice lingers on. Oh, the river valley rings when her broken heart sings for the love of sweet Cumberland Rose. there are two shadows standing in that mountain moonlight, where a husband's consoling his grieving young wife. There's a cradle between them, lying empty and bare, as her lullaby echoes in the darkness somewhere. They call her Cumberland Rose, where the Cumberland flows, and the sound of her voice lingers on. Oh, the river valley rings when her broken heart sings for the love of sweet Cumberland Rose.